The views and opinions expressed by the guests of the Inspira podcast do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of any agency of the United States government or any organization, public or private.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Inspira podcast, hosted by your girl, me, Erica Mueller Chen. I'm an international development specialist with over a decade of experience leveraging the amazing power of sport to promote peace and positive social impact. My career has allowed me to live in Europe, Southern Africa, and Latin America. In 2022, I accepted an offer for my dream job in sports diplomacy. And I also became an employee family member to a U.S. diplomat, aka an EFM. This podcast is all about inspiration and career advice. Each episode, I'll interview an inspirational global changemaker working in sport for development, social impact, or the diplomatic service. This series is perfect if you have interest in breaking into one of these sectors, or you've already landed that dream role and are keen to learn from thought leaders. Enjoy today's episode and stay inspired.
And I truly believe in partnership. I truly believe in founding this organization, founding this mentorship program, and be able to hand over to someone to continue with it. I don't want to be the only one who is empowered. I don't want to be the only one with all this information. I can be the first woman to do 1, 2, 3, 4, but I don't want to be the last woman.
Welcome, friends. Today's guest is Jaime Motibi from Botswana. Jaime brings over 20 years of experience and expertise in sport for social impact, with an emphasis on creating pathways for girls and women in Africa. She's also held multiple leadership roles for the very well-known and esteemed International Working Group on Women and Sport, IWG. Since our conversation, Jaime started a new position as senior manager for the Association for International Sport for All. They aim to bring joy, health, integration, and development to communities and citizens around the globe through the promotion of sport for all and physical activity. Jaime, welcome to this podcast. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Erica. I'm pleased to be here. Yeah.
One thing that I like to do at the beginning of each episode is share with the audience why my guest is inspirational, why they inspire me. I really just want to highlight how much, Jaime, how much you've done for women in sports, and especially for the sport for development and peace sector in Botswana. It's truly incredible, and I'm so excited to find out how and why you've done this work.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy that I'm inspired to you and to some people. Thank you so much.
Oh, more than some. All right, yeah. So let's jump in. One thing that I hope you can help me and others know more about is Botswana as a country. Is there any historical or social context that you can share to set the stage?
Yeah, Botswana is a beautiful country. You are around 2.5 million. So you can imagine such a small community. So you probably know that in some way you relate to one another in the whole country. That is what is very beautiful about the country. And also you are very communal. That is why probably some of us are drawn into sport for development. We believe that I can't be full when my neighbor is hungry. We believe that I can't stay next to someone and I don't even know their lifestyle. I don't even know their name. I don't even know their family. So that is a very good cultural background of Botswana. And that is why probably it's easy for us to step into sport for development or for community project. And we are able to sail easily in that. And also about Botswana, we are a rich country. Rich in culture, rich in terms of our economy in Africa, and rich in terms of a peaceful country, very welcoming, and our tourism. I always like to invite people to come to Botswana, especially for our tourism, and I'll invite you, Erica. Come to Botswana. Now you have a friend in Botswana, definitely. Yeah.
I'm so happy to hear you say that. Thank you, Jaime. That wasn't one of the hidden motives of my podcast, but it's a bonus, so I will happily accept that. So thank you. Well, Botswana sounds like such a peaceful, collaborative place. Tell me
It is,
more about how your upbringing was and when sport entered the picture for you.
I was raised by a very powerful woman. She's a single parent. She really one thing that I always say is she never forced us to become anything. She allowed us to have the space to grow into whatever we want to grow into. And in Botswana, you find that professions are mainly in the health, education, and probably you can become a policeman and into the force. But for her, she gave us the space. And I guess that is why I ended up in sport. Something that is people are not very familiar with in Botswana is because I was given that space to grow into whatever I wanted to be. So yes, my first sport is table tennis. My mother was a netball coach, but at a tertiary level, so she wasn't too much into it. But I found my niche in table tennis. I started off by becoming a, in, at high school. I was a school prefect, so that is where one my leadership a role started. And also I grew very much interested into sport.
Was sport for development something that somebody introduced you to? Did it exist?
Trust me, it's still not known that much in Botswana, but we ran some programs. We didn't even term it anything, but there were community-based projects. At the time, the notion sport for development was not that very out there internationally or in the world. But then in Botswana, completely, it was not there. You couldn't hear of it. But for me, when I played table tennis, I used to run some programs within table tennis. So sometimes I'll still even talk or give some instructions for the project that I'm running while I'm still on the board. So one day the team called me for a meeting to say, why don't you decide to leave table tennis and now you run your programs for table tennis? So that is how I got to be very much interested in women and sport in table tennis, mainly because I had this question at the back of my head: why are women not getting the same prize money with men? So I had a lot of questions, but I didn't have answers at the time. I didn't know how to answer those questions. And also, my mom became a church pastor. When she became a church reverend, she was not allowed to go into that space, mainly because she's a woman and also she was unmarried.
Oh,
So those
wow.
that also compounded a lot of questions in me. Why women are always getting the second best kind of treatment? So that is when I got so much interested in women and sports issues. And then I got to team up with other women and found out that there was a structure in Botswana called Women and Sport Botswana. I joined the structure, and then that is when I started women in table tennis.
Oh, wow. It must have been so powerful and meaningful for you having that family connection to identifying a problem in your community and in your country to motivate you to fix the problem. So that's how some of the best global change makers are born. How did you pursue that path, like practically speaking?
It's funny because I found the problem and I wanted to solve the problem for my mother. I decided to just penetrate her and start questioning in her work area, and she didn't like that at all. But but then later I realized that there's a lot of work within sports. I joined Women in Sport Botswana. I became the Secretary General. So during that time when I became the Secretary General, it was a volunteer position. But at the time I was working as a teacher. So being in a school environment where you find that children have a lot of different issues, the different challenges, and we became automatically become a coach when we are a teacher and we have played sports. So I coach table tennis. I also related to their personal problems. So I sort of felt like a need to help them to solve their challenges so that they can be active in sport. So combining that from a teaching perspective and being part of women in sport, I then managed to really find a lot of a work around women in sport. And then I also found a friend. At the time, she was the chairperson of women in sport. and our secretary general currently now. She's been a minister in Botswana. She's my mentor. She's my inspiration. And Dorcas Makato, and she's the one who now mentored me and started giving me ropes of how to deal with men and sport issues without necessarily being emotional about them. So that is how I got into it. Yes.
I'm so impressed by people who start their journey as a teacher or a sports coach, because that's really where I believe you can see so much, especially how young people function in the space, whether it's in sports or in the classroom, and what type of information they're getting and what type of information they might not be getting.
Yeah. Yes. And I was teaching a moral education, and it's related to counseling, it's related to teaching them about sexual reproductive health issues. We have those topics in moral education. So somehow I decided not to teach for them to pass, but to teach for them to change their lives. So that is also one of the things that really helped me in really going for social impact programs, because I started that early when I was a teacher.
I understand so much of your work has focused on gender, specifically on supporting and serving women and girls. Tell me, or tell the audience as well, a little bit more about what are some of the problems or the barriers facing women and girls, especially in Botswana or even the African continent, and what are some ways where you've seen sport address those problems?
Yeah, I think for me, now that I serve international boards for women in sport, I realize that there's a need to really bring gender issues under sport for development, because that is the only way we can be able to intensify our work around women in sport and gender equality in sport. But the barriers that are there, or the challenge that women face, continue to be equal pay in some of the countries here, and even equal opportunities. And one of the main issues here is also leadership positions for women. You find that women are actually at a very low position. Currently in Botswana, or probably the research that was done 2 years back, women were at 24% in terms of leadership in sport in Botswana. So that is quite low. And that is a challenge, because there are those barriers, and most of them are cultural barriers that prevent women to partake that. And the fact that in our culture, women are not necessarily, we came into sport quite later than men. So we found that men are really comfortable now in sport, and they're not really moving. We expect them to move for us a little bit so that we can come in. So that's the challenge. Yeah, so the challenge in terms of participation overall for women in sport, and also participating in leadership positions. Yeah, so those are the main challenges in Africa. And also there are no programs that are running that are really bringing women forward. So some of the women who find that they are very good in sport, but eventually they leave quite early because they are not motivated to stay, or some of them, the gender roles, they really don't help them to really stay much into sport, because they're expected to be doing some housekeeping at home, to be doing some lot of domestic work at home. Yeah.
Are there any specific strategies that you've seen work where sport has addressed those cultural norms? That's quite difficult work.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of programs that I was part of. One, I used to be running some open discussion with my partner in sports management agency, and we brought in people from different cultural backgrounds from different countries, just to show women in our country, in our region, that it's not like other women are having the same challenges than you. And some, they do have challenges like you have, but they manage to address those challenges. So you brought in people to come and address issues that affected them, how they address them, that's so that people can learn from that. Also, what I think has really worked for us is mentorship and empowerment. I started a mentorship and empowerment program for young girls from difficult backgrounds in Botswana. And that mentorship, I did for over 3 years. But when I look back and look at those young women, I find that there's quite a lot of change. So mentorship has really been one of those programs that I feel that are really, really working. And also training. I'm currently under my company, Sport Management Agency. We run a leadership training for women in sport, so that when they get into the positions, they're able to really say, I have everything that I need to be here. I'm supposed to be here. So let allow me to be here. And also we keep them with a truth for them to be able to stand for elections without necessarily being given a position on a silver platter. So those are the programs that we've been running, and they really have been working for us very well. Yeah.
Jaime, congratulations on just a few of those things that is so exciting to hear about. And so often from my conversations with people who inspire me in this sector, people mention mentorship and empowerment and how crucial that is. Hopefully it doesn't cost too much money.
Yeah.
That also creates a ripple effect and a legacy, right? Because you can't be everywhere. Yeah.
And we also have a mentorship program with Professor Mwanga. For some people from young women from Africa. We had a lady called Matilda Mwaba. She was our co-founding member of Women in Sport Africa Network, and she passed on 2 years ago. So we have started a program in her name. It's a mentorship program. And also from that program also, I could see that indeed mentorship really works. And right now I'm trying to write a paper with Dr. Mwanga about mentorship through using the African Ubuntu. Ubuntu, I don't know if you have the name, Ubuntu Velos, that we can actually have an African mentorship and really instill Ubuntu in the young girls that we are mentoring. So we are really trying to write that so that we can be able to encourage people to use Ubuntu when they do the mentorship programs.
Quick break here to highlight what I consider to be a fabulous resource that I've created for any listeners out there interested in learning more about the Sport for Development and Peace sector. You've come to the right place. In addition to Inspira podcast episodes that you can listen to, I've created a written resource that you can read, which currently has over 90 items I've curated from my own experience and vetted with other experts in the field. These include databases to find award-winning organizations, links to reports, books, and research, as well as recommended newsletters and recorded webinars, all Sport for Dev related. I encourage you to have a look. You can find this resource by visiting my link tree listed in each episode's show notes, then clicking Erica's Global Resource Hub. That's right, Erica's Global Resource Hub. If you like what you read and what you hear, I'd love it if you could give Inspira a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and write a kind review. That would be so energizing for me, and it would help Inspira reach more ears. Thanks, and back to the show.
Jaime, I'm wondering more about your experiences as a founder. At the beginning of this conversation, I had over 5 different examples of organizations that you founded or projects that you started. Why is that important to you, and how do you start an initiative or find partners?
Yeah, when you started, you talked about how partnership is important to you. But even today, during the day, I was reading a newsletter on LinkedIn by Richard Branson. He talked about the importance of partnership. And I truly believe in partnership. I truly believe in founding this organization, founding this mentorship programs, and be able to hand over to someone to continue with it. I don't want to be the only one who is empowered. I don't want to be the only one with all this information. I don't want to be the first woman to do 1, 2, 3, 4, but I don't want to be the last woman to, with that kind of, So that is why I keep on founding. I've never played cricket. I was never part of cricket. I knew that in order for us to really talk about gender equality, you need to have different women in different sporting code. That is why it was important for me to found to go and work with cricket, to have a women's cricket. Now they have national teams women's cricket in Botswana. I'm happy. I can see that they are doing very well. It's no longer my project; it's their project. table tennis. There's women in sports. We have a lot of women in sports now. There's equal pay in table tennis. It's not my project. Other women are benefiting from my work. And that is why it's very important for me to start all those things and be able to hand over to other women for empowerment and for programs to be running in Botswana.
Is there anything that you've learned from those experiences where now you feel more equipped to do that work than when maybe 20 years ago, when you were just getting started, things were a little bit more challenging?
Yes, I think the problem is you'd have a passion and want to people to share your passion or your vision. Some people wouldn't have that idea, wouldn't have that interest, or probably wouldn't understand what the vision that we have. So that was always frustrating. I would say I started some projects and they didn't even pick up because I probably had women there or with people there who were not necessarily buying into my ideas and felt like, what is this? So sometimes it's probably thinking that all people have the same ideas like you do. People have interests like you do. Most of the time people do not have. So that was always the challenge with me trying to find to start all these projects around. But I've learned that sometimes it's, you can't force people into things. People need to come naturally. People need to want to be there. People need to really feel like, I want to make a difference here. If they don't want, even if you can give them the tools, if it's not their interest, you won't be able to put them there. So that is what I really learned. Right now I work with people who really have interest to make a difference. And even if some are interested in sport, some are not interested in sport, but they can use sport as a tool to make differences. So I'm using both techniques to allow people to do whatever they want. Yeah.
That's really interesting, especially thinking about these two groups of people. I'm really simplifying it, but a group that knows what sport for development is and believes in it, and then a group of people who are not exposed to the sector and maybe less motivated to be involved in the sector. And it sounds like you've navigated finding those groups and starting eventually with the people who really believe in it and getting them on board. And then once you have some more momentum, you can start to bring in other people. Can you speak to that experience in Botswana, if you've kind of motivated or educated people on what sport for development is?
Yeah, I think like you rightly put it, people in sport development, they don't think they need to be part of sport for development. They have athletes on the side. They want athletes for excellence. But for me, their welfare is also important. And where they come from, the community they come from, is also important. So you can really bring the two together. But in any case, what I did is I was part of the task team content developer for MOOC for Sport for Development, which is online. The course is now online on futurelearn.com. So what I did was I brought a group of people and then we did the course together as a team so that they can have interest. So every Monday we'll come and present how far you've gone with the course.
That's excellent. And I was lucky to interview Dr. Ben Saunders, who spoke about the massive online course by sportindev.org. That course really relied heavily on experts in the field like yourself. Tell me a little bit more about how you've seen sport for social impact programs in Africa impact their communities positively.
I truly believe that the sport for development in Africa is really growing, and you can see a lot of impact in Africa so far. I recently did a course on safeguarding with Norman Brook, and people were presenting what they are doing in their respective countries, Tanzania, Kenya, and all that. It was impressive for me that, wow, people are really moving. And if you look at Zambia, NWASPA, NWASPA is doing very well, and in terms of programs for development, they're really using sport for development, and they have partnership with international organizations and with other countries that are doing very well. So for me, I believe that we need to capacitate the NGOs that we found existing with sport tools so that they can be able to drive the program that they've been running as well. In Botswana, we've had a lot of programs, NGOs for GBV, for HIV, AIDS, and a lot of NGOs in Botswana, but you don't have a lot of sport for development organizations. So there's a need to bring the two together, and for the people who are running NGOs to understand that they can even use sports as tools to run their programs. So I really believe that there's quite a lot of work even though I can see a lot of development in Africa in terms of sport for development.
What advice might you have for people who feel like they don't fit in the work that they're doing?
Yeah, I have two things. There's an article in Botswana that said dynamite come in small packages. I find myself having to be described like that. And also, there's a woman who told me that, you know, honey, you are doing quite a lot of work, and but you are so short and so small, you won't amount to anything. People who are this small, they don't have that integrity. That, you know, that thing really took a toll on me. For some time, I believed that I won't amount to anything. And then
Wow.
another story is when I was in Arabuji in Sydney, and I had to step in for one of the Africa girls because there was a continental panel discussion. So when I finished, the person who was taking a stage after me said that I didn't know that intelligence also runs in the black chromosome. You know, that thing also took a toll on me. I truly believe that statement for the longest time. It really eats me up. But I can tell you what, I'm telling you this too because I tell you that nothing can stop you. Nothing. If I had allowed this statement to really be those obstacles, I wouldn't be where I am. So I had to snap out of it to make sure that, you know what, honey, you have to become what you want to be. So I'm simply saying, you know what, if you think of it, then you can do it. You just have to put your mind to it and you'll definitely do it. And that is where I am right now. I've put my mind into what I want to become, no matter I'm small or I'm too. See, I'll do it. People will hear me and people have heard my voice and they'll continue to hear my voice. Yeah.
Jaime, I'm so sorry to hear that those words were ever said to you or even thought by somebody. Those comments are unacceptable and it's blatant ignorance and racism. I'm relieved to hear that you overcame this.
Yeah. No, I think so. And I truly believe that right now, like I told you, I've lost my mother in April, and I sort of felt like I went down, and people told me that, you know what, you are a very strong person. You can't allow yourself to go down. And I used to say, no. I was strong because I knew that I had this strong mother behind me who was, she, even if she was not saying anything, she was pushing me. My mom was also a gender equality, a gender activist in the church. So we really shared a lot in common there, and we used to discuss a lot. So until I felt like, you know what, mom would want me to continue what she started. So I have to snap out of it again. So you keep on reminding yourself that, you know what, snap out of it, snap out of, do it, do it. If you think it, you can do it. That's what I believe. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
it's okay to go through periods of grief, of course, and periods where maybe you feel less motivated or less supported.
Yeah.
And when you're ready, you can make that decision.
Yeah, and I hope I'll be able to continue the work that I'm doing. I'm currently running Women Sport Africa Network, and I'm hoping that because we co-founded it, we have to make sure that it grows. We are trying to bring, we have a Facebook page. We are bringing all the women and sports stories in there. You can actually go and see the page as well. You'll probably find a lot of people that are interested in the page. People are allowed to share whatever information, whatever work they are doing from any country in Africa. So we really are encouraging people to come out and be able to share the stories. Every story can make an impact, no matter how small it is. So we give people the space to share whatever work they are doing. And probably, and we know that what someone will be inspired to do more, to do better. Yeah.
One topic we haven't touched on as much, you went to the University of Tsukuba in Japan. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that program was like?
We're part of the legacy program for Tokyo 2020. We studied sports and Olympic studies, and I chose the sport for development path because I wanted to come back and now make sure that I continue my career in sport for development fully now without necessarily going in between sport development and sport for development. That is how I landed in there. And also when I was there, it was an international program, so I had made friends from 15 different nationalities around the world and who were also doing different courses, and that also really inspired me as well to now stay for the Olympics. Because we are the legacy program for Olympics, we are even given some jobs in the during the Olympics to work for the Olympics, which are a bonus for us. So I also became one of the Botswana people, because like I said, Botswana is a very small country, beautiful small country, so you don't find us everywhere all the time. So I became the first Botswana to work for the Olympics. I was under Olympic Broadcasting Services at that time. So that is my beautiful experience.
What was it like moving and bringing your daughter with you to Japan from Botswana? What was that first month like?
I remember having to apply to bring my daughter. And when I got to the Tsukuba, it's a council offices, I had to answer a lot of questions. Why am I a single mother? Why am I not married and I have a kid? Because in my country, it's not a problem. You can have a kid without being married. And in Japan, they couldn't understand. You have a kid, you are not married. Why? You want to bring her? Where's the father? It was a lot of questions. I nearly gave her, but I felt like, you know what? I really have to do this for my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I was expected to bring a certificate of the fact that I'm single. So I had to come back in Botswana. You don't have such certificates. And I suspect that I'm the only Botswana with a certified approval that I'm single.
Well, I'm laughing because it's so wild to think about, right? Like Jaime going to some government official to get a signature, yeah, proving her relationship status.
Yeah.
The life of a woman sometimes.
Yeah, you always have that when you are married, but here I have to prove that I'm single. So that is when I'm... That is...
You're certified. You are certified.
Yeah, I'm certified. I have a certificate for that. I'm certified single. So I had to, then I brought my daughter there. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is the support that you get from the social protection in Japan is quite interesting. Mm-hmm. The support they gave me as a single mother and for my daughter, she went to a Japanese school, no English at all. She was she had to learn Japanese, and she was really doing very well. She learned Japanese very well, and yeah, it was interesting because I had to run between being a mother and being a student, but I managed. We are back home now, and we are doing very well.
What an experience.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of the developmental speed that young people can pick up languages.
Yeah,
incredible. So
I don't know Japanese. She's very fluent in Japanese, you can imagine.
You have enough information going on in your mind. Japanese is one more. So wow. Well, thank you for that amazing career background, sharing that with me. Is there anything that we haven't talked about in terms of your career experiences or accomplishments that you wanted to share today?
Networking and exposure. You know, when you come from this part of Africa, you find people in Europe or in America to be, it's always wow, and you feel like you probably can't be anything closer to them. But the network that I really built for during Ira Blue Gym, I find myself having to really deal with people from different parts of the world. And it's good for me and for women in sport in Botswana and in Africa. Currently, any other information that I get, I make sure that I bring in more women to benefit from. That is why I told you right now that if you need more help, I'll be able to give you more names, because I feel like, you know what, if I manage to get in this opportunity, more women should be able to get that opportunity. So for me, it's about leaving a legacy for myself, and also leaving a legacy so that young women in sport can be able to look back and say, if Jaime managed it from Botswana, 2.5 million people in Botswana, and Jaime managed to be that international, I can also be that international in terms of leadership roles in different international organizations. I had a vision. I had a dream to be to work for international organizations, and it happened for me. That, like I said, if you believe it, it will happen for you.
Now that we know more about our guest's career journey, the rest of our conversation will allow us to have some fun and get to know our guest on a personal level through some rapid-fire questions. We'll then start to wrap up with pointed questions focused on advice and how our listeners can transform interest into action. Enjoy the rest of the conversation. why is ping pong your sport?
I grew up very quiet, very reserved. So ping pong, you know, we don't have a lot of friends who make too much noise. So I like it because they are that quiet.
What's your favorite food?
Cultural food. We have samp mixed with beans. And then our meat here, pounded meat, is called sosoa. That is my favorite dish in my country. That is what, if you give me that, I'm a happy woman.
What's your favorite African city outside of Botswana?
Oh, Seychelles. I went to Seychelles. It gave me the same comfort that I have in Botswana. What do you call the city in Seychelles?
It's an archipelago, right? It's like 115 islands.
Exactly. It's small islands. So when I was in Seychelles, I really fell in love with that country because it's small and you can finish every part of it within a day or so. So
you said Botswana is small. I bet in Seychelles they knew who Jaime was after a week.
Yes, I like that. But also I went to Abuja. You know, when you see Nigeria in pictures, you only see Lagos. Lagos is quite too busy and too loud. But Abuja is the opposite of Lagos. So you feel like you're not in Nigeria. So I also fell in love with Abuja, yeah.
Oh, I'm adding so many things to my travel list. So thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have a favorite non-sport hobby or activity?
I'm a movie person. I love movies. Yeah, I love movies, and I also read. Mm-hmm. I like to read for especially the bios. Mm-hmm. I enjoy reading bios because they inspire me. Mm-hmm. I like to find myself reading about other people's life and realize, oh, okay, no, that, then I was not wrong that much here. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Do you have some favorite movies?
It's funny now because I love Korean movies and Asian movies mostly.
Yeah. My mom loves Korean television shows and rap music. And she's been trying to convince me to listen. And I'm like, okay, mom.
you need to join her. It's quite interesting.
What advice would you give to people interested in learning more about the sport for development sector?
Yeah, what I can say is it's quite a very interesting area. You'll enjoy if you are a people's person, but also it's challenging because you have to make an impact. It's not something that you get in and get out immediately. It's not something you do because you want money. There's no money in sport for development. You have money to run programs to change people's lives. So people, when they get into that space, they shouldn't think that they're going to make money in response. It's the money that you have to do to run programs with. So that's the advice that I'll let you. And also, it's so fulfilling to have an impact in people's lives. I think I'm so fulfilled to do other work around me. So I think that what portfolio mentor will do will always inspire you to do more, to work more. And also for sportful development, what I can say is partnership is very important. Mm-hmm. Partnership is very important. If you know how to implement programs or design programs, look for a partner to do monitoring and evaluation for you. If you can't do everything, make sure that we have partners to do. So don't do the half work. Make sure that you do the full work, but you bring in a lot of support for the programs. And I can only say that for me, it's fun. I really enjoy working with communities. I really like what I'm doing. And I truly believe that people would enjoy doing sport for development programs. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've talked about networking and partnerships. What advice would you give to people, especially maybe younger people studying or recent graduates who are interested in knowing how to strategically network or meet like-minded people?
For me, I use my LinkedIn account to also go into people's inboxes and say, I'm Hame, I'm doing sport for development programs. How can you assist? I did that because I'm running courses here for safeguarding in sport. And I went to safeguarding officer for Manchester United. And I told her that I'm running programs. Is there any information that she can share with me? I didn't know her. I just found her on social media. Any information that she can share with me that I can use. You know what? She responded, gave me a lot of links to follow, a lot of information, and said, if you need more, let me know. You know? So try it. You'll open your networks. Start the conversations. Be open enough to start conversation, because if you don't go out there, people won't come back to you. They wouldn't know that you need the help. But because you need the help, go out and get the help for yourself.
What do you think the future of sport for development looks like?
It looks so bright. For me, it looks so bright. One, the organizations are really growing, and the information on sport for development is growing. Now there's a course that you can do. There are some training that you can take. 2 days ago, Japan Sports Council and Sport and Dev were launching a guidebook for implementing and all the way how you started sport for development programs. So for me, I believe that we have the tools available to us, the sport for development practitioners. All we need to do is use the tools, implement, change people's lives, and through sport for development, we can improve sport development. Yeah.
Yes, you are talking about the toolkit, Bridging the Divide in Sport and Sustainable
Yeah.
Development.
Yes.
Excellent. And it's freely available. So that
It's
is
freely
an
available, yes.
excellent suggestion. Jaime, what can our audience do to support you or your work moving forward?
I'm running a program for young children, 13 to 19, beautiful children and very talented. I've written some proposals around to make sure that now they have sports facilities around. All they need is support in terms of training people within the community to be able to train them in sport, and also provide a sports kit to provide them with all other necessities. That is currently what I'm doing. This November, every November and April. November, we are having sports festivals. April, we are having some life skill programs. So if you have anything that you want to assist us with, or become partner, or become a part of the program, feel free to contact me in my LinkedIn, in my social media pages, Facebook and Instagram. I do have pages there, and my name is Kame Mutib in all of them. So you can be able to reach me out there. Yeah.
Since we did this interview, there's actually been a professional change for Jaime, so I caught up with her to ask her one more question. Jaime, I understand that you recently accepted a new position. Can you tell me a little bit more about what the role is and perhaps reflecting on how you secured the job? Are there any strategies or tips that you think were helpful for you that might be helpful for other people when they're applying for sport for development and peace jobs?
Yes, just before I get to my job, quite recently one of my mentees sent me a message actually today to say, you know, I understand why you always emphasize on networking, on us putting ourselves out there. And she said she did that and already she got some networks. And I think I'm sharing this because it's exactly how I got to know Tafisa, where I'm working right now. I joined Tafisa in October last year as a senior manager. And how I got my job is obviously Tafisa had advertised the job, but also I had a very good working relationship with Tafisa, spanning from 2016 when we first met, when I was the International Working Group on Women and Sports Secretary General, and Tafisa became a partner to IWG at that time. And they were very happy with my relationship with them. They're very happy with my job, and they were very interested in me joining them as soon as they had an opening. So for me, it was mainly because of the network that I formed when I was the IWG Secretary General, and also it's because of the humility they say I have and the hardworking person they believed I am. So that is how I got my job. And I, in sharing with people or inspiring people who probably want to work overseas or who probably want to work for international sports organizations, I can only say that put yourself out there, be inspired, go out there, make sure that you connect with people and you build on your networks and you expand on your networks and you learn how to really make sure that you to sell yourself so that when people see you and people don't see you, they still remember you. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on that new position. And it's great to hear how your experience with IWG helped in terms of you getting to know contacts at Tefisa, and as you mentioned, doing the hard work, just knowing someone's not enough. You have to prove your skills and your value, and then also keeping in touch with people so that they do remember you, they do think positively of you, and you've been able to do that amazingly. And look where it's taken you, from Botswana to Japan, and now you're in Frankfurt, Germany. So I'm really excited for your future.
Yeah, and even for Japan, it was the same thing. I had put myself out there. I had made sure that my networks works for me and not for people that are around me. So it's very important for people to always make sure that they keep in touch, like you just said. Yeah.
And my final question, which I invite you to answer in Setswana and perhaps translate for us if you feel so motivated to do so, is Jaime, who inspires you?
Thank you, Erica. I'm inspired by Mama Wame, we know her game mewaka. Ubereka tata, una lilo rato, umuntle, we to hopela, and do the twitch little. Mo go ene asa dipateletse because o tshotswantse yalo ke motho leng gore o tlhagatata mo tirong ya gagwe, and this means just that my mother is a very strong person. She's very hardworking, she's empathetic, she's loving, and she's a very beautiful woman who dressed very beautifully and with a very melodious voice because she loved singing a lot. She raised 5 children all by herself. She even took in other people's children to provide them with shelter. She passed on this year in April 2022, and she left all her children over 35 years of age, all working and able to fend for themselves. So to me, she's not only a role model, she's not only inspiring me, she was my mentor, and she remains my hero.
Thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful. Thank you for your time today, your wisdom, sharing your story, sharing your inspiration and your advice with us. It's such an honor to speak with you, and I'm wishing you all the best ahead.
Thank you, Erica, and thank you for the opportunity. I had fun too. It was nice to hear. Now, thinking of all the work that I've done. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Inspira podcast with Erica Mueller-Chen. I really hope you enjoyed the episode and found it useful. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. Specifically, my link tree is there with tons of awesome information. Feel inspired to take action today? I've got 3 action steps you can take right now because you know your girl likes calls to action and the number 3. So here goes. Number 1. Follow the podcast on your chosen podcast platform. Number 2, share your feedback with me through the listener survey listed on that link tree. And number 3, tell just one friend about this podcast so they can give it a listen too. And do I have any overachievers out there? I've got a bonus action step, which is to consider supporting me and making sure this passion project prospers. So number 4, follow the link to buy me a coffee. That would be pretty amazing. Until next time, stay inspired.